What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new installment of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast. Today it's Wednesday, so it's brought to you by our good friends at Mr. B Clothing at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. Hop on down there. They got a, you know, last time I was in there with Timmy Sitzman, he was trying to sell me a bunch of these wool blazers. So you know that it's basketball season coming up, and that's why Travis Hines is here today. Travis, Ames Tribune, how are you, my friend?
I am excellent. How are you?
I'm great. You're making your debut on the Fanatic podcast. Are you okay with this? You feeling good?
I'm incredibly excited. This has been like years in the making. I do want to say, however, I will walk out of this room if you try to talk me into getting a physical. I am an avid listener to the Tuesday podcast, and I will not be putting up with that like our friend Tommy Birch.
That is only That's only for the Tuesday podcast, the Mr. B clothes, or this is the Mr. B one.
Okay. Get me to dress nicer.
Yeah, basically. I will only be pushing you down to 86th Street to buy some clothes.
My wife would probably appreciate that. As you can tell, I'm not a high fashion person.
It's nice having you in here because when Birch comes in, Birch is very much like slacks and a collared shirt type guy. Yeah. See, I'm here in my flannel and blue jeans and a hoodie, and you got your hoodie as well. This is a good mix.
This is perfect.
This is comfortable for me. Birch, though, what's Birch's deal? He wears those Mr. B slacks everywhere.
Everywhere.
Does he?
I assume that's a register mandate to like not dress like a bum when you go into work. We don't have that problem at the Ames Tribune.
I was going to say, that sounds like a miserable place to work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you and I, we're both tie guys at football and basketball games.
Absolutely.
So there's a time and a place. Just, I didn't get into sports writing to wear slacks 5 days a week.
Yeah, I'm a blue jean and tie guy.
Yeah, I'll mix that in every now and again.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of that, I gave Tommy a shirt that you left in my car from the Big 12 Media Day.
Okay, I'll be sure to ask him about that.
You left it in my trunk because we went to the Royals game and we had to do the quick change in the parking lot.
I wasn't just undressing in Chris's car for fun.
Yeah, we need to clarify that because I know that some punks on the message board will take that the wrong way. So tonight, let's get this down. You got a football game to cover tonight?
I get to cover Gilbert Humboldt in Humboldt.
Paul Rhodes' boy.
Yes. Yeah. So I assume Paul will probably be there.
My Bondurant Blue Jays defeated the Gilbert Tigers earlier this year in a shocking upset here in Bondurant.
Yeah, I'm sure it was the pink locker rooms that did the Tigers in.
It was. Yeah, no, Bondurant's got a home game tonight too, but I will not. See, I was going to go watch Urbandale Ames. My buddy coaches for Urbandale. I'd planned on going to that, but then it's freaking game seven tonight.
Yeah,
I can't be doing the – this is not state tonight, all right? This is sub-state.
No, this is first round.
Yeah.
This is the first go-round for these guys.
Yeah, so if there's anybody making T-shirts right now that they made it to state, they're lying.
But I'm just saying, like, if you want to hitch a ride with me to Humboldt, you're more than welcome to. You can transcribe tape for me after the game.
I've been there once, and I vowed to never go back. No, I'm just kidding. Nice people at Humboldt. I had a brief stunt with a gal from there, but that was it. Very brief.
I'll see if I can track her down.
Yeah, her down. So Hines is here from the Ames Tribune. So obviously we are going to talk college basketball. This will be kind of part one of our Iowa State basketball season preview. We got a bunch of stuff coming up. Bloom's coming on next week. Bloom, we're going to get his officiating power rankings heading into the 2014-15 season.
That's big time.
Yeah, who's your favorite Big 12 ref? Do you have one?
I don't even know all their names. I feel like that's something I should know. Like, I only know the ones that get in trouble when they screw up a call at Iowa State.
O'Neal,
Bert Smith, who was Whitehead, was the guy that didn't screw up against Kansas. I feel like I should know more of these. Our guy Randy Peterson is, like, best friends with half the league
but
officials.
If you're going to be around as long as Peterson has been, though,
very true.
You'll know the refs. No, I think it's better that you don't, though, because the refs shouldn't be a part of the game.
No, but I mean, you do see the same guys. And then obviously, Hollywood Higgins, I'm well versed with.
I'm a big Hollywood Higgins fan.
I think he does a nice job. Yeah. You know, I am kind of sad that the Big 12 didn't. I don't think I ever covered a game with our man, Eddie Hightower.
Oh, yeah.
That's too bad.
Man, I just remember growing up, it seemed like my dad and I, we watched a lot of college basketball. Every game you turned on Ed Hightower, it was like he was in two places in one night.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, you read all the time, like every couple of years that becomes an issue with how many times these guys are officiating in a week. And he was, I don't know if the biggest culprit's the right way to say it, but he was definitely one of the guys that was playing or calling like 5-6 games a week.
And wasn't it a deal with him too, where he was like a principal, like a high school or something, and he would like take a Learjet to these games and go back? I swear I've read that.
I don't doubt it. I don't think. I mean, obviously these guys are contractors.
Yeah.
If they're working just for the league, so they probably have full time jobs.
No, I swear.
How you could be a principal? You know, basketball takes place during the school year, though.
Well, I swear, I'm gonna get Bloom to fact check me here, but I swear, in another official, like a guy that works the high school ranks here in Des Moines, was telling me this, that Hightower spends like every night in his own bed, that he's got this jet, he's got a pilot, and that the guy will, you know, fly him to games, goes back, sleeps in his own bed, goes to work, flies out at 3, gets there. Like, it's just crazy.
Is he like the Mark Cuban of officiating?
Apparently. Apparently. And it's why he's all wired up, too. He's not getting any sleep.
He's more like the Marlins man.
That's
who he is.
That
guy's
unbelievable. How would you like to have that much money? Just disposable income where you could just say screw it for 3 weeks, buy $1,000 tickets. That's on the cheap.
It's unfathomable to me to have that kind of money.
You know,
like when I get a couple extra $100 like in a month, it's like going to town.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, you got a lot of quarters at the up down if you get that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I will pump all that into the Simpsons, and they got a new Turtles game that I haven't checked out yet.
A Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Turtles in Time. That's like really high on my list to check out soon.
I gave this question to Birch. Who's your favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Oh, Raphael. Isn't that everybody's?
He's the red one, right?
Yeah, he's the badass.
See, I like that. That's a good answer. Because I think a lot of people back in the day would go Leonardo.
Because he was the leader.
Yeah.
He's kind of a wuss, though.
Yeah, I wasn't a big Leonardo guy.
He was always preaching patience and restraint, where Raphael was going right into the middle of it.
Raphael was there's a hint of stupidity there, but you admired it because it was pure.
Absolutely.
Michelangelo, I thought, was trendy because he's just kind of the hot blonde airhead who everybody's attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really not a lot of depth to that.
He was
character.
Like the straight stoner one that just like they all loved pizza.
Yeah.
But Michelangelo loved pizza.
That's all he wanted to do is eat the pizza. Yeah. And then Donatello to me just was boring.
He was the pocket protector turtle.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
egghead.
He was the guy who, when everybody else wanted to have fun, he's the guy when everybody else wants to have one more beer, he's like, no, we need to cut it off, guys.
He was like, I saw this reference to Darren Revelle recently on Twitter, that he's the guy like 2 minutes before class gets out reminds the teacher that he or she forgot to collect the homework.
Oh, yeah.
That's Donatello / Darren Revelle.
Oh, man. We could go on and on about these turtles.
Who needs basketball?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Good stuff. Did you see the new Turtles movie? I never saw it.
No.
I got to hit that up, though.
Yeah, I'll
when it comes out on like
Redbox it or Netflix it.
I was obsessed with the Turtles in my childhood.
Me too. I just have a hard time giving Michael Bay any more of my money after the last few years.
Yeah, I understand. I understand this. But, you know, it's kind of like the new Dumb and Dumber. I have to watch it.
I'm going to like hate watch it like on midnight the night it comes out. I know I'm not going to like it, but I actually got for like probably like my 16th birthday a huge framed black and white photo of the two of them on the scooter that was above my bed for all of high school. It was in my dorm room. It was in my college room. So
okay,
that's how much that movie meant to my childhood, which probably tells you guys a lot.
Clone season opener is the same night as Dumb and Dumber 2 comes out. We should totally go after the game.
We should be wrapping up like just by the time the midnight showing
starts. Yeah, no, we should totally do that.
Absolutely. Sign me up.
All right, I'm in. All right, let's actually talk some basketball.
Let's do it.
I'm a little bit, frankly, I'm pissed off. So I got jury duty. First time in my life. I can show you the slip. It's right here on my desk. Juror.
Boy.
And the date, and I don't really understand this, 1 week / one trial. For the term of service. So, like, do I have to be there for a full week?
Well, I don't see any wood in here for me to knock, so I'm not going to say that I've never even gotten a jury summons before, but I have no idea how any of that works.
I got hit up on Twitter because I'm ticked off because the week that I have to go to jury duty is the ESPN College Hoops Marathon. That's, like, my favorite day of the year.
You're going to have to clear out your DVR and just put it in another 24-hour block.
The glory of it, though, is you wake up whenever you wake up. Like, I remember when I was doing morning radio in Western Iowa, because I would have to be in at the office at 5:30. I had a little TV in my office watching college hoops. Like, I'm watching, like, the Lehigh game or whoever. You know, like, it doesn't even matter. It's The point is that it's on at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I'm usually the other way, where I'm going to bed at, like, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
This
and
is true.
Watching it.
We have opposite schedules. Yeah. But that blocks me, so I'm a little bit – I really look forward to that day
don't
every
year.
Don't
you get a couple deferments before you actually have to do it?
I don't. It says here on this piece of paper, because I tried to get out of it. Because, frankly, I was a little concerned because we have to go to Kansas City the next week for the CBE. And I'm like, well, what if I get stuck in this long, long trial?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they shot me down. They said no.
Whatever excuse you have, they've probably heard 1,000 times better excuses.
Oh, I know.
Over the course of the years.
I knew it was a lame excuse, but I'm like, I got to get – I was told on Twitter, though, because I was complaining about this on Twitter – I was told that if you vote, you have a higher chance of getting jury duty.
I guess if you're like a registered in your county, that might, because that's usually where you get it, right? Is through a county.
Yeah. So this guy's telling me, don't vote.
Great advice. Do not exercise your civic duties. Don't vote. Don't do jury duty. Just be an exemplary Iowan.
Well, now that you put it that way, I probably should show up.
We should all probably vote in a couple of weeks.
My apologies, though, is this, for the lack of content at Cyclone Fanatic that week. I don't know what else to do. I got to show up and serve Polk County. All right, Iowa State. They've got this secret scrimmage with Minnesota. It's not secret anymore. I don't like the term secret scrimmage because everybody knows it's happening. But they got it going on this Sunday in Ames. Is what I've been told. Mm-hmm. I also heard today, I don't know if you've heard this, they're doing it next year too with Minnesota?
Yeah, in Minneapolis. They signed a two-year deal.
Two-year
deal. I don't know if they signed a two-year deal or just agreed to a two-year deal, because I think they did the same thing with Creighton the previous 2 years.
Oh, okay.
And last year they were in Omaha.
Yeah.
I don't think Greg probably would have signed up for that after he left, so I think that was a...
Absolutely.
Maybe he did. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But this is a two-year deal, yeah.
Because they had Nebraska as well.
Yes.
The Minnesota Iowa State series intrigues a lot of people because of Fred's background, Abdul Massey's background. They recruit up there. You're a Minnesota guy. Do you think that will ever happen, or is this a deal where it seems to me like when I go through my mind and when I'm thinking, if I'm in Minnesota's shoes, a home and home with Iowa State really doesn't have many advantages for anybody at this point.
I hear totally conflicting things on this all the time. And like you said, as a native Minnesotan, this is something I just like to track because it's interesting to me. I have heard Minnesota has no interest in it. I have heard Minnesota is really seriously considering it. I've heard they're wishy-washy about it. I haven't gotten a good read from it. You know, talking to reporters up in Minneapolis who are kind of close to the situation think it's closer than maybe I do. And I don't know if that's Minnesota feeding their reporters something so it doesn't look like they're scared to play Iowa State.
Yeah.
Because I'm with you. I don't think it really benefits Minnesota at all. And I've said this before, it benefits Iowa State hugely. You know, they recruit up there so much. Iowa, if Minnesota ever wanted to recruit in Iowa, which they probably rarely ever will, they don't need to play Iowa State to do that. They play the Hawkeyes every year or some semblance of that in the new, jumbo Big Ten. Yeah. But where Iowa State, if they can, tell Amir Coffey, hey, you're going to be playing at Williams Arena in front of your family, twice or once in your career, that's a huge thing. And the other thing is if Iowa State goes up there, nobody's writing about the Minnesota basketball team. They're writing about Fred Hoiberg.
This is true.
What the recruiting Iowa State's doing there, and they're writing about the Minnesota Timberwolves. So in that respect, maybe Iowa State isn't thrilled about it either. But I think Iowa State would sign up for it in a heartbeat.
Oh, I think they would too. It's just really hard for them over the course of history because of Hilton Coliseum to get good home and homes. I mean, think about it. Like, name a Florida. Mm-hmm. Just throwing out a high-level SEC opponent. Like, what are they – because you're signing a – a death notice by going to Hilton Coliseum. You're probably not going to win that game based off of recent history. It's really hard, I think, for them to schedule those sexy non-cons. I think that the tournaments are really where you're going to get that going forward.
And maybe you've heard differently than me, but I think in the last year or two, I think certainly the last year, they haven't
aimed for those super high-level teams like a Florida, where I think they could actually maybe do that, because what does Florida care about dropping one non-conference game? They're going to go 16-2 in the big or in the SEC and get a top three seed and go to the Elite Eight or the Final Four. That's what Florida does. I think the issue, and you know, we saw this last year, they tried to get it with Minnesota, they tried to get it with Nebraska, and those mid-level high major schools, they a loss to Iowa State it could be bad for them, whether it's on their home floor or in Hilton Coliseum. And I think Iowa State, they turned down some interesting neutral site games, like playing Gonzaga in South Dakota at the Corn Palace, because they wanted to get a home and home. And I think, you know, we see the South Carolina game in Brooklyn, which is interesting, but not for any way, shape, in the form of who they're playing, just where they're playing.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of got stuck with that late. But I think they absolutely want more high-level opponents coming into Hilton Coliseum.
Well, this non-conference schedule is not, I wouldn't call it sexy, but I'd call it interesting, though. I mean, there's teams that'll make you go, I'm going to pay attention to that game.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it suffers from the fact last year's was really interesting, really cool, because you had Michigan coming in. You had, you know, going to a place where nobody really wins at BYU against a BYU team, which didn't end up being great, but watching that game, they looked really good.
Yeah, and so that's still an impressive win in March.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, at that altitude and all that, I think this schedule struggles a little bit from that. And what if Jahi Carson would have stayed at Arizona State? That game's a lot more interesting, or that potential game's a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Georgia State's going to be tough. You know, they won 25 games last year. Iowa State's not going to have McKay, Nader, or Thomas.
That's a scary game, though.
Absolutely.
For Iowa State. I mean, because I don't know about you, but do you think this team, because I thought last year's team gelled really quickly, do you think this year's team will do that, or do you think it will take longer for them to come together like that?
I don't know that I could say definitively one way or the other, but my guess would be it's going to take longer. I mean, just look kind of how herky-jerky things are going to be for them with not having Nader and Thomas the first, you know, two games plus the exhibition, then not having McKay until December 20th. And from everything that, you know, we've heard, McKay can totally change the dynamic of how this team plays. So so do you have to throw away those first eight games and start from scratch from what they're doing because of McKay? And so I think it could be a struggle for them from a chemistry standpoint. I think this will be Fred's most difficult job of trying to get the chemistry on the court to where it needs to be.
I heard numerous times now that Matt Thomas has just been lights out in practice. In fact, that I heard earlier today, Fred told us that down in Kansas City a few weeks ago, but it hasn't stopped. Matt's been one of the best players on the team so far during practice. I don't know what that means long term, but I do know that it means if that's going on in practice right now in scrimmages, then, you know, that Georgia State game, you're really going to miss a guy like that. Nader, to me, is intriguing because he's the one guy, the one newcomer where I can't really get a read on what to expect, because he played such a different role at Northern Illinois where he could basically do whatever he wanted to. And Fred's not going to put up with that. Nader seems to me like a guy who, you remember Booker his junior year, we'd have two really good games and then just one, he'd just be, you know, what is that guy? That's kind of the read I would get from him. What do you think on him?
I think transitioning from being the one and only guy on a bad, bad team to being, the third, fourth option maybe on a really, potentially really good team is going to be a tough transition for a guy who's probably always been the go-to guy on his team. And I've heard, you know, some conflicting things about him. I think he has struggled at times in practice, you know, through the summer and into the fall, but then other times I hear, you know, he's, you know, shooting the lights out.
Yeah, I've had two or three guys tell me, like, they saw scrimmages last year, like when he's on the scout team, he's the best player on the floor.
The thing I've heard about him is that you leave him open, he'll shoot 30%. Yeah. You guard him and he'll shoot 65%. He's a guy that makes tough shots, and that's kind of his thing.
Yeah.
So I think that leads itself to probably some of the inconsistency that you were talking about, where maybe you're going to see some good games and some bad games.
Yeah. No, he's just a versatile guy, though. I mean, he's a perfect guy. If Fred's going to have a bit of a project, I think he's a really good guy to throw into the mix.
I mean, you look at him, and, you know, the term NBA body gets thrown around so much now, but you look at him, I mean, what do you see? I mean, that guy is, you know, 6'7". He's got a 7'1" wingspan. He's thick. He can jump. That's a guy who has a ton of physical tools.
Don't you feel, too, like as far as the chemistry conversation goes, because it's clearly the big one going into the season. They've got the talent. But I feel like Niang and Long, specifically, like with the the stranglehold they have over this. It's their program. Mm-hmm. Clearly it's Fred's, but then they are an extension of Fred Hoiberg on the floor, in practice, on Friday nights when the guys are hanging out. Like, I feel like those guys are just another Fred Hoiberg policing everybody. With DeJon Jones, with Nader, guys who have suspect past, and we've seen this before with transfers, it's generally the case. But don't you think it's harder now for a transfer to come in to impose its will like Royce could have done a couple years ago, now that Niang and Long are just proven leaders on that, in that clubhouse?
Yeah, I think there's a culture in place at Iowa State. And to me, the culture, and this absolutely comes from Fred, like you said, is professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are college kids. They have fun. They goof around. But they really, really take playing basketball seriously. These are all guys that want to have professional careers. A lot of them, that's why they chose to come to Iowa State, especially these transfers. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, it's their last chance, or their, you know, second to last chance, or their last best chance. And, you know, these are guys, all you hear Fred talk about is how much these guys are in the gym. And I don't think that's just lip service. You talk to anybody and they're all like, these guys are always in the gym. And I think that type of professionalism lends itself to these guys all being on the same page.
DeJon Jones, I was just reading right before you got over here my trusty copy of the Blue Ribbon, a quote from Fred about DeJon Jones and being the most athletic shooting guard that he's ever had at Iowa State. I think that there's a common theme, and you're gonna hear it on television broadcasts this year and on talk radio, where people are automatically going to throw him into the second coming of DeAndre Kane. It doesn't. And I haven't seen UNLV play much. Just full disclosure, yeah. I haven't seen this kid play a whole lot. I'm going off of what Fred and what Matt Abdelmassey and Cornell Mann have said. It doesn't seem like the same type of a player, though. I mean, they're similar in the sense that they're graduate transfers, but that and they're guards. But other than that, I don't see a huge correlation here.
Yeah, I think it's the things you said. Plus, those have probably, with maybe Royce as the exception, been the two guys with the most character red flags from their previous stop. And he's not going to be the same player as DeAndre. He's not a point guard. I mean, DeAndre Kane was a point guard 85% of the time for Iowa State, even when Monte Morris was on the floor. And I think he can be the, you know, quote-unquote second coming from a production standpoint. You know, I did a blog last spring when they were recruiting him, and if you look at his numbers really across the board from what DeAndre did his last season at Marshall, they're really similar. They're going to get to those numbers in very different ways, because I think DeAndre was more of a ball dominant, you know, needed to be bouncing the ball to get his, where I think, you know, DeJon Jones, ideally, I don't think that they have him handling the ball a lot. I think a lot of it is, you know, maybe drives to the basket or pick and pops or coming off screens to shoot threes. That's the way I envision what they use him for, not, you know, initiating offense. He's the guy that finishes, not initiates.
Well, it's nice to have Monte Morris, though, coming as a sophomore. You know what I mean? Because that's another thing I was just reading before you came over, doing a little research, and just you take for granted the numbers he put up last year. But now that it's like a year removed and I go back and look at what he did, it's astonishing. Even if there was DeAndre Kane beside him, it really was impressive.
I talked to him on media day, and he was talking a lot about getting back to who he was as a player, that he felt like last year, I think exact quote is, he felt like he took a year off from being a point guard. That's how much DeAndre meant to him in terms of his style of play, and that he was really excited to get back to the style of basketball he's played for, you know, the first 18 years of his life. And I think you're going to see a lot of the same, but I think you're going to see him be a little bit more aggressive. I think we saw that down the last stretch of last season, where he was going to the basket a lot more, and that ended poorly with Aaron Harris in West Virginia.
Yeah.
But, you know, we did see that more and more.
And the three-point shot.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see that coming. That was the thing with him going into the season. That was his big drawback. But he was one of the best guys on the team percentage-wise.
Yeah, and the thing, too, everybody forgets is he's the one who hit the game-winning three in the corner against Oklahoma State and Stillwater.
Yeah.
You know, everybody remembers Naz Long's forcing that last overtime, but it was Monte that won the game for him.
Fred said it numerous times, like he couldn't afford to have him off the court at the end of last year.
No, and that, again, that's not lip service. You look at his numbers. I mean, he played, what, like 38 minutes at Allen Fieldhouse or something crazy like that? And how many times did he play over 35 minutes?
In the plus-minus stat, too. I don't remember what it was, but it was crazy in favor of him.
I mean, he's a guy that impacts winning. And I did raise an eyebrow talking to him on media day, because he talked about how much he's been working on his mid-range shot. It's like, well, have you told Fred that?
Yeah.
I don't know how well that would go over.
Yeah.
But, you know, that there's nothing wrong with adding to that part to your game. I just wonder how much they'll use it. You know, maybe they're going to run some pick-and-roll action lower than the three-point line. Or, you know, the mid-range game for him, now that I'm thinking out loud about it, would probably be really advantageous for when they're trying to run those lobs to Jameel McKay, where he can pull up and a team doesn't know if he's going to shoot it or lob it up to McKay. So that could be one little wrinkle to that fact.
Clayton Custer is his backup, by all means. He, you know, another quote I just read from Fred that I hadn't seen a definitive of an answer on Clayton Custer from Fred, but he something along the lines of there are absolutely minutes to be played by Clayton Custer. By all means, everything I've heard, the plan is for him to back up Monte Morris, God willing, he stays healthy. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to this next discussion that I wanted to have. You say true or false. I'm going to give you my opinion. You either agree with me or disagree with me. This is a safe place. You can disagree if you want.
The internet is not a safe place, Chris.
Exactly. I think, I'm sorry, it is impossible. And when I made the note, I put impossible in capital letters. For all of these guys to play as much as they want this year.
Absolutely true.
Okay.
There's only 200 minutes in a game.
Yeah.
There's 12, 13 guys that are, maybe 11 guys are expecting minutes.
The guys I don't think Dorsey Walker plays much. I don't think Adosie is going to be his classic Adosie role. The Salbaris, to me, is a project. I think he'll play some early in those first
his
two
size
games.
Allows him to play 10 minutes a night without an issue, I think.
Even with McKay back?
I mean, 6 to 8 then, maybe,
okay.
Something like that. I think he'll play.
Will he be happy with 6 to 8? I don't know much about Salbaris. I mean, he's a guy to me where I can't wait till that exhibition because I want to see this kid play.
I think they've been pretty upfront with him about what they expect, and I think
put on some weight, and then you're going to be
I think 10 to 15 minutes is probably what they sold him on.
Yeah,
not that they were misleading him, but I just think that the fact that he's so thin and the fact that just the way Iowa State plays and the transition for him from international play to Big 12 play is going to be tougher than I think maybe he's expecting.
Okay, so which leads me to the greater point of this is a challenge for Fred as a coach that he's never had before. I mean, his deepest teams have gone 8, yeah. 8 deep. He's never had this is a luxury, but it can also be a curse, I think. And Fred's a nice guy. You know what I mean? Like, he has the delicate role now of managing egos, which he's pretty good at, we've seen, but in the same point, doing what's best for the team. He's going to make those decisions, but I could see in February this, you know, God willing, with Niang's leadership, those things that we've already talked about, the culture that we've already painted out, you'd like to think that these guys all stay on one page, but I think that we're naive to think that this won't be an issue for somebody along the way this season.
Yeah, I think, number one, winning cures a lot of those bruised egos.
Yeah.
Number two, I think a lot of guys who are expecting minutes are going to get minutes, and it's not going to just be as many as they want. I think the one guy that maybe gets left out in the cold is Sherron Dorsey Walker.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking to him this summer, you know, I straight up asked him if he thought about transferring because any, you know, 95% of guys in his situation the last 2 years probably would have transferred.
Just like Percy Gibson did.
Yeah. He's
a little older.
But. Yeah, and you look at him, you know, when you're adding more depth to his positions – with Nader and Dijon Jones, you know, he can really only play those two and the three. You know, where are his minutes going to come? And he said, no, he never thought about it. He wants to contribute. He likes it at Iowa State, and he's not a quitter, and which are all commendable, but I don't know where those minutes come from. I haven't heard a ton, you know, about him coming out of practice where he's made these great strides. I think he is a Division I basketball player. I just don't know if he's going to be able to crack the lineup for Iowa State. And the other one is the caveat, if Matt Thomas struggles like he did last year, I think he could be out in the cold a little bit too for minutes, just simply because he could probably play a little bit of time at the three, but I mean, ideally you only have him at the two, right?
Yeah.
And that's
the only place I would think.
And there's going to be a lot of competition for minutes there with Dijon Jones and Naz, and maybe play Naz a little bit at the one, but that was not a very good experiment his freshman year.
Dijon Jones at the three some?
Maybe. He's probably lengthy enough at 6'5", 6'6". You know, I mean, there's probably some minutes there. I mean, it's going to come down to Matt. If he's making shots, he's going to play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be up to him. That's not going to be – I mean, we saw it last year. It took until basically the Big 12 tournament where Fred really kind of sat him down because he wasn't making shots. If he's shooting 35-40% from three, he's going to be playing a ton.
Yeah, if not,
it's going to be up to him.
He was still a better defender last year than I thought he would be, but he's still. I don't know if it's fair to say he's a liability out there if he's not making threes, but points last year I thought he was.
That's why he's out there, is to make threes. And I think we saw, or at least I saw, some flashes of stuff that he did offensively last year where you kind of did a double take because you hadn't seen it and you didn't know that he was capable of it. I think it was in the Big 12 tournament where he took a guy off the dribble and did a left-handed floater.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, where the hell has that been for the last 4 months, you know?
It's all about confidence.
Do more of that, yeah.
I truly believe he's one of the guys who I saw him play some in high school. He is a much better player than what people saw last year. Once he gets that mindset, I think it was you who was with me interviewing him at the Cap City League this year, where it's just, you know, I'm not the rookie now. This is just as much my team as it is George Niang's, or name a player. The less he thinks, the better he is, and it sounds like that's the route he's going right now.
Yeah, and it's not – I mean, the way we're talking now, and you know, I'm just as guilty as this as anybody, is we're acting like he had this – train wreck of a freshman year.
Correct.
When really he was, if you look at his macro numbers, they're fine. He shot 33% from three.
Second best in history.
Second, 44 threes, second best for freshman in Iowa State history. He started 15 games. I mean, he had some stretches where he was terrible. I actually, you know, I talked to him on media day about it, and he opened up quite a bit about how tough last year was for him. And so going through you know, kind of the game logs, he had a stretch where he was like 12 of 52 from the floor.
Yeah.
And he still shot 33%, which tells you there were times where he was really good. And I think, like you said, it's with him, it's confidence.
How do you see the rotation going, I guess is the better question. Because last year, I think we can all, I don't want to get into the Hawks too much, but that was, you know, the similar conversation heading into last year for Fran McCaffrey's team. Oh man, they can make line changes. You can go 12 deep. I still don't see Fred doing that though, do you? How deep does he go on a normal Big 12 game?
Oh gosh.
I don't
think he ever goes 10. Maybe he goes 10 where a guy gets 2-3 minutes, or you know, just some stretch like that, like we saw Dorsey Walker a few times last year.
Yeah.
You know, the last couple minutes of a first half. But I mean, he's a, you know, not to raise any, you know, alarm bells for your listeners, but Fred's an NBA guy. They don't play 10 guys a game.
No.
They play 8 or 9, you know, with pretty tight rotations, and he's shown that. And, you know, I think they probably go deeper than 8. You know, I think they go at least 9 during the non-conference, and that wouldn't surprise me to see that come down a little bit.
That's kind of been his trend.
Yeah, and the first few games, I mean, this is, you know, tough to say with the guys being suspended and McKay being out, but if all those guys are available, then it wouldn't necessarily surprise me to see him go 10, 11 deep in one of these games against UMKC or something like that, or that first game against Oakland.
I think you'll see a lot of you saw this like with Naz's freshman year. He played a lot during the non-conference, and then, you know, they kind of shut him down for the Big 12 portion. I think you'll see that, not necessarily to that extent, but Clayton Custer, Salbaris.
Yeah.
I think Salbaris will play a lot early on. Like, I'm talking like 15, 20 minutes in those first few games.
And, hell, Daniel Adozie might be your starter the first two games.
Yeah?
I mean, what we saw with how Fred decided to do things in the NCAA tournament when George went down, you know, to have
that. He started that game against North
Carolina. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He started both games against North Carolina and UConn.
Yep.
Simply so they didn't have to go small right from the jump. You know, he only played, I think, 8 or 10 minutes. But I think they like Naz Long coming off the bench. I think Naz is a great off-the-bench guy. I think he'd be perfectly fine starting. But to have that three-point shooter coming off the bench who can also defend, you know, that's kind of, you know, it's Tyrus McGee light shooting, but with an actual mind for defense.
Yeah.
Because Tyrus couldn't play defense, but he shot 50% from three, so it didn't matter. And I think Naz is maybe fits that mold a little bit. You know, Tyrus could have started for either of those two teams,
yeah,
but
absolutely.
Fred liked him coming off the bench.
Well, it'll be interesting. I've never looked forward to an exhibition more than this one.
Watch out, V-Hawks of Viterbo.
Props to you. Points to you for knowing that.
Yeah, I got
to
give courtesy to Iowa State SID Patrick Tarbox for his mom went there, I guess.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, how about the name V-Hawks? That's like I wouldn't have gone with that if I were Viterbo.
Viterbo?
The turbo? V-Hawks. I don't know. I have not looked up the pronunciation of the V-Hawks.
What's the connection? Because usually when these little schools come in, there's like a, well, that assistant coach, coach played with Hoiberg. Or...
I think I knew the answer to that at one point, but now I can't. But I'm sure there is a connection there, I'm sure. They're an NAIA school, too. So, I mean, these are scholarship kids.
Yeah. No, they, the Viterbo, I'm looking forward to a week from Friday. Here's another question that gets tossed around a lot. People saying that this year's team is expected to be, quote, better than last year's team. When I posed that to you, how do you interpret that? Like, do you consider better, like, if this year's team would get to the Elite Eight but have a worse regular season record? That's a really hard thing for me to comprehend if this year's season is supposed to be better than last year.
Well, as you know, anybody that follows me on Twitter or reads what I write knows I'm an advanced stats.
You're a guru. You and
I would not go guru, but I do adhere to them and follow them pretty closely to understanding what makes a good team and what makes a good and what makes a bad team. And so, to me, for them to be quote unquote better, it has less to do with the end result. Like if. What if they have a terrible draw in the NCAA tournament
that's
and don't make the Sweet 16? They can still be a team that if you put them on a neutral floor when, you know, in a video game, the other team beats the other one. So I think they have a chance to be better, but whether that means they finish, you know, I think if they're better, they're probably not finishing worse than third in the Big 12. But, you know, they could lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I mean, that
happens all the time.
That's what the NCAA tournament is.
Yeah. It's all about your draw, and it's all about some breaks that happened along the way. Iowa State caught a tough break last year with George Niang. Still made it to the Sweet 16.
Let me pose this to you. Do you think this team, from the way I posed it, is from just a process standpoint rather than results, do you think they can be better than last year's team?
Like if you would put this year's team up against last year's team, who would win?
Yes, sure.
Like a full roster with – no.
You don't think they'll be better?
I don't. It's hard for me to say that. I've never really seen DeJon Jones, which is a huge piece. But I think that the Edgem Niang, or excuse me, the Edgem. I mean, I've seen those guys. I've seen what they can do. So for me, I'm a little bit biased towards those guys at this point. But I think DeJon Jones is clearly insanely talented. I think that Jameel McKay is probably an upgrade from Melvin Edgem. Just straight up, who would you rather have on your team if you're building one? Now, and Edgem's one of the greatest ever play in Hilton Coliseum, which is kind of crazy for me to say that at this point. But just based off of everything I'm hearing, McKay is damn good. But I think, because all I'm thinking of, Travis, what I'm thinking of last year's team is the mode they were in Kansas City. That's going to be really tough to be quote-unquote better than how they were last year. But scholarship 1 through 13, clearly this year's team is a much more talented basketball team.
Here would be my counter-argument, because I think they can be better. One, Jameel McKay, I think absolutely is a game-changer in the way that – I don't think he's going to be a huge offensive threat, but I think he changes the way defenses have to deal with Iowa State, especially in the pick-and-roll. If he can be a good pick-and-roll guy, you know, with those three-point shooters that they have, or with Monte Morris, and or even George Niang, hell, the way that he passes the ball, you can do pick-and-roll with George.
Oh, absolutely.
And you've got that, and I think he's a total game-changer. Plus, I think you could argue, and no one was a bigger proponent of George Niang last year, I think you can make the argument that he statistically didn't have quite as good a year as his freshman year in some respects. He didn't shoot the ball as well from the three-point arc, turned it over a little bit more, I believe. And I think he could be in, as kind of crazy as it sounds, based on how, you know, effective he was last year, I think he could be in line for a huge leap this year.
Really?
I do. And I don't think it has anything to do with the weight loss. If he wouldn't have lost a single pound, I would have said the exact same thing, because I think he's going to shoot better from the three-point arc. I think he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot more, and that's when he's effective, is when not even necessarily scoring, but just facilitating.
Well, I will agree with you. I think this year's team's more talented. But last year's team had a weird knack, though, man. Like, it's very few times in sports where you get teams who, you know, how many times were they down double digits?
With like under 8 or 5? 9.
Yeah, like and they'd always find a way to win. And, you know, when I watch the Iowa State football program, and it's like they can be up 17 with 10 minutes to go, and they still find ways to lose the football game. And to me, that was what was so impressive against last year. It's also a little bit skewed, though, because, you know, at some point you'd think that the law of average, you're going to lose some of those basketball games, too. They flirted with danger a lot and escaped.
And I think the last year's team was by far Fred's most mentally tough, especially coming off the year before, where I think that team had some mental fragility to it, especially in close games.
Is George the leader of last year's team?
I think it starts with Edgem and Kane last year, but Niang was certainly part of it. I mean, how many games did he win for them in the last 5 minutes?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, the way I always viewed it, Melvin is he's a watch me leader. Mm-hmm. Watch how I do this, and I'll lead you. But he's not like a vocal guy. I mean, I didn't see if Melvin Edgem's on this year's team and a newcomer comes in and isn't doing it the quote unquote Iowa State way or whatever. I don't know if Melvin gets in his grill immediately. George will. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
From what I've heard, Melvin did have a bit of a temper in practice too. So, you know, that was a factor. But I think that was more if things weren't going his way, he'd get upset. Where I think, like, to your point, I think Niang is a guy that really holds his teammates accountable.
Yeah.
And I think with his weight loss, that gives him even more leverage, probably isn't the right word, but just cachet and capital with those guys to say, I've put in the work. I'm doing what I can to make this team better. You know, you better come along with me.
I've heard a story about when Melvin first got on campus. It was like his first practice. It wasn't even a practice. It was like one of those summer workouts. And I think it was like Jordan Raley screwing around or something like that.
Good.
Yeah, and Melvin got so pissed off. I don't know if he threw a basketball at him or something, but it was like this freshman, you know,
yeah,
from the East. You know,
Canadian. They're supposed to be nice.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mild-mannered.
He was just so irate with, I think, and I apologize to Jordan Raley if it's not him, but I'm almost positive that, and it would make sense.
There was probably a couple of potential culprits on that team for screwing around in practice.
Very, very true. But, no, I'll miss Melvin. He was a fun guy to watch. He was a fun guy to cover. Okay, let's do a couple Big 12 things before we roll. Kansas. This Devontae Graham guy is intriguing to me. Because he's not a guy who's going to get all the preseason pub, but I kind of feel like he's a piece to the difference between Kansas being like a Sweet 16 team and a possible Final Four team. What's your take on Bill Self's squad?
I like them a lot, obviously. You know. Yeah. That you don't accidentally win 10 straight. But I
clearly
totally agree with you with that point guard position has kind of traditionally, and, you know, my Big 12 knowledge isn't as nearly as expansive as yours, having not been around the league as long as you. But to me, that's been one of the weak spots of Bill Self's teams. Mm-hmm. Mario Chalmers maybe notwithstanding or being the exception to that rule. You know, Nadir Tharp wasn't putting fear into anybody's hearts.
No.
And so if they can get that guy to – I mean, if let's say that he starts, the guys that he's going to have around him are Kelly Oubre and Cliff Alexander, probably two lottery picks next year.
Yeah.
Perry Ellis, who I think might be the Big 12 player of the year if he gets the ball enough.
He looks like he's like 60 years old.
Yeah, and he's only a junior.
Yeah.
He's in Niang's grade. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But those guys are going to be like in walkers and, you know, having gray hair by the time they get out of school.
How much does Perry Ellis hate George Niang, you think?
I don't know. He usually has really good games against Iowa State.
This is true. But you know Niang's like running his mouth and stuff.
Oh, nonstop. I mean, yeah. Niang got it, picked up a technical barking at, I think it was Jeff Withey, his freshman year. His first career or second career start or first career, second career start against Kansas in Fog Allen.
Yeah.
And Niang's barking at Jeff Withey.
That's awesome.
Picks up a T.
That's great.
So you got those guys, and then you've got Wayne Selden, another potential. I mean, they got four potential Big 12 Player of the Years on that team.
Yeah.
So that fifth guy, he's pretty damn important to get them the ball and not turn it over. I think I don't know that the point guard for them, whether it's is it Graham? I always forget the kid's name. I know his first name's Devontae,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he the Appalachian
him
State.
Or Frank Mason, whoever's got that job, they're going to be a big determinant on how far they go. If they're still terrible, there might be enough talent on that team to deal with it.
Yeah.
Would be my point.
Texas is another one. There's a lot of talent there. There are a lot of bigs. you know, clearly, I mean, this is their front court is what makes Texas intriguing.
Did you see the tweet yesterday that Barnes has been playing Jonathan Holmes on the perimeter?
Oh, no.
6'10" Jonathan Holmes.
Has he really?
In practice, supposedly. I doubt we ever see that in the game, but well, that's just frightening.
And that plays into my point. Like, if you're playing Iowa State at Hilton Coliseum, can you really have all those guys on the floor at the same time?
You're definitely playing zone.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, who traditionally in the Big 12 defensively has given Iowa State problems?
Yeah.
Baylor.
Yeah.
With all that length.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe. You know, if Iowa State, because if Iowa State can't defend them, they can't get out and run. If they can't get out and run, Texas can set up a zone with where you got a 6'10 guy out in front of it. And so maybe they can do that. But if Iowa State can defend them, and now they've got Jameel McKay to maybe anchor the defense in the middle and they can get out and run, then no, you cannot be playing a 6'10 guy
yeah.
at the three.
Are you buying Texas?
I'm very wary of them.
Me too.
It's hard to pick against them because they were so successful last year. They bring everybody back, and they bring in a consensus top guy in Miles Turner. But with that said, I think they really punched above their weight last year. And a regression to the mean, you know, falling back to earth wouldn't necessarily surprise me.
So if you had a Big 12 poll, where would you have Kansas, Texas, Iowa State, like a lot of people?
That would be mine. Yeah, I'm kind of on the consensus of that. And any of those three, if they end up on top at the end of the year, wouldn't surprise me. Oklahoma might surprise me a little bit. I know a lot of people are putting them in that conversation.
Lon Kruger, man.
Lon Kruger is great. I've come around on that bandwagon.
Thank
100%.
You.
But with that said, if they don't get the kid Tashaun Thomas from Houston eligible, I don't really like their team all that much.
It doesn't sound like they will.
And to me, I mean, then you're asking Buddy Hield to do a lot of scoring. And I don't know that he's going to be totally capable of doing that all by himself.
I kind of like Kansas State this year, to be honest.
I love Marcus Foster.
Yeah. And then
he's
they got that
fantastic
Georgetown transfer who sounds like they're in love with him down
yeah.
there. I think league-wide people don't even know who he is at
yeah.
this point. But they still got Gibson. They still got Williams. I like that roster. Yeah. It's the whole coach thing that makes me a little bit weary.
Yeah, I mean, so this is year three of Bruce Weber. That's kind of where things started to turn against him, I think, in Illinois a little bit, if I'm not mistaken.
He didn't have a guard like Foster, though.
No, but he did. Was
early
that
on.
05, yeah, with D.
Yeah.
Brown. And,
early on,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm saying when it fell apart, he didn't have a kid like that.
No, I mean, that kid is awesome. Mm-hmm. I think he's another Big 12 Player of the Year candidate if he can, you know, shoot a high enough percentage. I love him. I think him and Isaiah Taylor might be two of the more fun guys, returning guys to watch in the league from Texas.
I think that, you know, a lot of Iowa State fans were outraged by Kansas State being placed ahead of them in the Big 12 coaches poll, but roster-wise, Kansas State's legit, man. They're nothing to sneeze at.
I wouldn't have ever in a million years picked them in the preseason poll ahead of Iowa State, but what I would say is I think coaches are really leery of uncertainty, and when you've got all the transfers that Iowa State has losing to All-Americans, I think coaches, from their perspective, will go, well, who knows what they're going to be?
Yeah.
And that's why you get Kansas State ahead, because you've got Marcus Foster, because you've got Gibson, because you've got Owundu.
And to add to that, I mean, if you look at every media poll, that's not the case anywhere.
No, I think we buy into newness and uncertainty a little bit more, and then it comes back to bite us, like, you know, we saw with Kentucky not even making the NCAA tournament a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I think the media had them one or two in the preseason
Just
poll.
Like every JUCO in football history.
Yeah.
It's like, hey,
instant starter.
So next Jeremiah George. He hasn't played a snap this year. You know, it's football's just a whole different animal.
Absolutely.
But no, I get it, and I agree with you. I wouldn't have put Kansas State up there either. But my point is, though, I think would you take Foster or State? And I'm giving you a pick, either one, to start a team.
Oh, man.
Who do you want?
Is eligibility an issue? Do I get
Foster
for 3 years? Just a year?
Making a pick for a year, yeah. Fantasy college basketball.
If it was this year, I'm taking State.
Really?
That dude, he's
really good.
He might lead the league. He might pull a what's his face? The little point guard from Baylor from 2 years ago.
Kenny Cherry?
No.
Oh, Pierre Jackson.
Pierre Jackson. Yeah. He might pull a Pierre Jackson and lead the league in scoring and assists.
Man, I love watching Baylor basketball, man. I just love it.
That could be ugly for them this year.
I actually agree.
There is not a...
There's not the talent to bail Scott Drew out now.
And there's not even the hugely lengthy guys. I mean, they still have got the 6'8", you know, 6'7", lengthy guys, but they don't have 7'1", 6'9", 6'10", like they've had in the past. So I don't even really know how they're going to play.
Yeah.
I don't know that they can play. I assume they're going to play that zone, but it's not going to be as effective as it's been when you've got, you know, Perry Jones the third and Isaiah Austin running it.
Is this Ford's last year at Oklahoma State?
That's really intriguing to me.
Because his contract's a
Kills them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you read the Oklahoman article where Mike Holder basically was like, yeah, this sucks that we have to keep him.
Yeah.
But his contract, we just can't afford to fire.
My point is, though, like, by keeping him, though, he can't – I mean, you're tying his hands. He can't recruit.
No, he already lost Austin Grandstaff.
Yeah, because these recruits aren't stupid. They know that everybody wants him fired. There's nobody going to games now. So by buying him out, at least you're selling some – you're showing your fans we care.
I think he's got like 7 years left on his contract.
Yeah.
And like going down there last year was really kind of sad because it was Eddie Sutton night.
Yeah.
That place was maybe a third full. For, you know, one of the all-time great coaches in college basketball, rules breaking notwithstanding.
And that was the team that was picked to win the Big 12 going into last year.
And, you know, it started to come unravel a little bit for him at that point. But, you know, I usually try to listen to sports radio when I'm in a town, you know, driving to the arena or just driving around town. And down there, they're killing Travis Ford.
Yeah.
Like, they have guys, like, openly advocating to get him fired on talk radio. And, you know, saying every booster I talk to says they're done supporting Oklahoma State basketball. And Boone Pickens doesn't care enough about basketball to really even get involved.
And so, that's kind of my point, is you can't afford to buy him out, but can you afford to keep him? And you see these schools that, you know, these giant contracts all the time where, you know, the reason why, you know, if anybody, and not advocating this, don't read into it, but Paul Rhodes is a great example.
Yeah.
He went 3-9 last year. He's 2-5 at this point in time. But Jack Trice Stadium is still full every single Saturday, and people are still supporting the program.
You just got a $25 million donation from a booster.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
It's, from an economic standpoint, the program is healthy. With Travis Ford, you have underachieving basketball teams. You have fans who openly hate the coach, and they're not going to games. Like, I just think it's at the point this year, like, if they're 8th or 9th in the Big 12, like, I don't know how you keep him.
I agree with you, but just reading Holder's comments was like, it sounded like he felt like he was stuck with him for a while, win, lose, you know, regardless. And it was like really depressing to read that.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, just fire the guy if you hate him that much.
Travis Ford's wife feels reading that.
Oh, like, it's got to be terrible. And I mean, this is the guy that starred in The Sixth Man that they're talking about. Yeah. It's truly depressing.
It's a depressing thing for everybody, too, because like, say Ford, like, how do you recruit?
I think they did just get a decent guy in 2015, but I can't remember. But the crown jewel of their 2016 class, Austin Grandstaff, who's probably going to end up being a top 30 guy, decommitted last year. Now he's at Ohio State.
Yeah.
And it's just shy of a tire fire down there, I think. I mean, if they get off to a bad start, I'm with you. I don't know that they could finish worse than 8th, given TCU and Texas Tech are in the conference. But if they're down.
I think TCU may be better than them.
I guess TCU, that's how much you buy into Trey Ziegler.
I think TCU could potentially be better than Baylor and Oklahoma State. Potentially. I want to watch them play a little bit.
Yeah, I guess that's probably their best case scenario. I haven't seen enough Trent Johnson over the years to really get a read on him. I find him an interesting interview because he's like,
he's great,
crazy honest about his team. So, you know, I think that's a good thing for a coach. If you're terrible, you know, there's no use masking it when you go, what are they now, 2-38 or something like that in Big 12 play? And I know they only have 2 wins. But I don't hate their team this year. I've hated their team in previous years. I think Kian Anderson, their point guard, is sneakily maybe one of the top 5 point guards in the league.
I would agree with
that. You know, he's in that conversation.
He's the guy who put on the show last year at Hilton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got Trey Ziegler, who at one point in time, you know, was a Duke recruit until he decided to go play for his dad at Central Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
His dad got fired. He went to Pitt for one awful year, and then transferred to TCU, sat out last year. But this is a guy, you know, that was a 5-star recruit. You know, they get Amrick Fields back, Devontae Abram. You know, is a nice player. So I don't hate the roster. I've hated the roster in previous years.
Yeah, that's my my one prediction for today. TCU will finish above either Oklahoma State or Baylor in the standings.
So that's 7th. You got them as high as 7th.
Yeah. Yep.
I'll buy that. I don't think there's any way they finish 10th again. I think Texas Tech has locked up.
Yeah, lock it up. All right, national champion. Who do you got? Kentucky?
Wow, that's a good one.
I'll give you mine. I like Duke. this year.
Yep.
I like the trio. You know, the Winslow, Jones, Okafor trio.
Tyus Jones from my hometown in Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah.
There we go. And they've got the classic Coach K pieces. Duke wins it all. Coach K rides into the sunset, baby. That's the pick.
All right. I think there are five or six, like, teams you could, like, today say are number one teams.
Yeah.
Duke, Arizona, Kentucky, maybe Louisville, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah.
They're going to be good. In there. That's, you know, full disclosure, Kansas. That's my – yeah. I don't think you can put them number one preseason, though. I think they could be a national title contender fairly easily.
They have the talent, but not proven.
Yeah, I wouldn't put them in the preseason number one. But if you're saying who's going to win it at the end of the year, I like the Duke pick a lot. I think this might be Arizona's year.
Yeah.
I like Arizona a lot. I like what Sean Miller's building down there. You know, he's got the California recruiting locked up. You know, UCLA is going to be killing themselves for not hiring him instead of Alford in a couple years, I think. I mean, I don't know if they could have pried him from Arizona because he's got a good thing there and that's a good program, but he would have absolutely killed it at UCLA.
Yeah, they would have been. That would have been a dynasty.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not a believer in Steve Alford?
I don't hate him. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was a Big Ten fan for a long time that he was at Iowa, and I get why people can't stand him there.
Yeah.
And the whole sign a contract one day at New Mexico and bail for UCLA, what was it, 2 days later?
Yeah, something like that.
Is about as, you know, greasy as it gets.
That's Steve Alford.
But I think he's actually an above average coach.
Yeah, I would say.
I wouldn't say he's great. But I'd say he's pretty good.
I would agree with that. So you're going to go Arizona. I'm taking Duke.
I'm going to take Arizona today.
Yeah. Okay.
With full ability to change my mind about 15
Perhaps
times.
We can meet up again in a couple of weeks after exhibition play.
Yeah, maybe before or after the Big Four.
Yeah. And we can refresh our projections for the season.
Yeah, I'm totally into that because I think there's another Champions Classic this year too. You know, remember last year they had Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, Michigan State. I think there's another one of those that start the year off.
Yeah, it's the – doesn't it all start on the basketball marathon night?
Yeah, it might. Because I would say it plays on the first day, the 14th, right? Is that their first game? That's the first day you can play games.
Actually, I'll just pull it up here.
Yeah.
Because I was reading this yesterday. I get really jumpy this time of year because – and it's full disclosure. I've talked about it for years. I like college football, but I'm a basketball guy.
Covering a 2-5 team might expedite that process.
Potentially,
a little bit
that has something to do with it. But
and I spent our entire podcast yesterday talking about TV and movies from the year 1990, which was the last year that Iowa State beat Oklahoma. So
was Saved by the Bell brought up?
It was not. It didn't begin in 1990.
Hottest Saved by the Bell chick.
Oh, Kelly Kapowski.
Yeah, Kelly Kapowski guy. I went through Elisa Turtle phase.
Staying power, too, though, with Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Yeah. I went through Elisa Turtle phase.
You can't go wrong there.
Yeah, but now I'm back on the Kelly
bandwagon.
So, yeah, the night of the Hoops Marathon, there's some really good – Kansas, Kentucky. That's the big dog.
Where is that, does it say? Is it in the United Center again?
Hold on. Let me there's an asterisk. Neutral location, I can't figure it out.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But that, I don't know what that is a part of, but that's a big game.
Yeah.
Obviously. And that looks to be the only, like, featured game on ESPN that night. Usually they have a couple of really huge games. Oh, Duke, Michigan State.
Yeah, so those are the four teams that played last year. They're just flipping, I think.
Yep.
Duke, Michigan State. Because, yeah, it was Wiggins versus Jabari.
And that's when I have jury duty.
Oh, you poor thing.
So I'm hoping they'll let me out by five.
I would imagine.
Now, does Iowa State play Georgia State that night? Oh, I hope not.
I think that's like the 16th.
Oh, okay, that's the 17th, and we're talking about the 18th.
Yeah.
Thank Jesus. Because Iowa State always has some like crappy non-conference game on the night of the Hoops Marathon. Always.
Yeah. Are you really excited for that 7 p.m. tip against Mississippi Valley State on December 31st?
Why? I heard it's, like, sold out, though.
They sold out against Northern Illinois last year.
People love...
Yes, this is your listeners' fault.
Why do you punks continue to support the New Year's Eve basketball game?
Think of us before you buy those tickets.
I mean, it's a terrible idea.
Or at least play at, like, noon or 1.
Yeah, I'd be all about that. Yeah. Like, I'm fine with playing it at noon.
Yeah, I think I walked into my apartment at like 11:55 last year. Just made it.
Luckily, last year,
that was the Bloom.
See, that was why
scenario.
I was so ticked off
and
about
Johnny
it.
Orr.
Oh yeah,
that was a busy day.
That was a wild day. So Bloom proposed that night, and my wife and I were like, we had helped Bloom for like 2 months set this thing up, and so I knew like, okay, I gotta be there for Bloom. I'm sorry. I think Ian Smith covered the game for me or something like that. But I'm thinking, you know, Iowa State, you should at the very least check with Cyclone Fanatic before you schedule, because we may have proposals going on. There's certain things that happen on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it was a wild scene with, you know, Johnny Orr dying that day. And it was a cool atmosphere. I think it was cathartic for a lot of Iowa State fans. And I think, you know, Fred even too, you know, kind of didn't say one way or another. But it looked like maybe being able to play a basketball game. And I think Iowa State scored almost 100 points. So it was kind of a basketball tribute to, you know, playing Hilton Magic and Johnny Orr style basketball.
It was therapeutic for a lot of people. Yeah. And I remember, so my wife and I, after Johnny Orr died, we knew they were going to do like a tribute. And Ashley's kind of could tell. Like, I'm the type where if I'm not working, I'm really antsy. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, like, I haven't missed a game in Hilton in I don't know how many years. Like, it's just really like, I can't stand not being there. Mm-hmm. And she could tell at about like 5 o'clock that I'm like, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm really antsy. So she's like, "Hey, let's just go up and watch like the first 10 minutes or something." Because she knew I wanted to be up there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't to watch the game; it was more like the Orr thing. Like, I felt like with my job, I need to take this in so I can have a sense.
Yeah, it's
of,
a huge communal thing.
Correct.
You know, when you got a guy that looms that large over a program.
Yeah. So we actually went up there, and I think it was like Tron up at Wilson Toyota had like, he had like 4 extra tickets that night. He had already given them to my parents, and 2 of them weren't even being used. So we went up there and just kind of sat and took it all in, which it was a, you know, I ripped them really good for playing that game. And I'll do it again this year because it's just stupid to have a basketball game on New Year's Eve at night.
The problem is that these people keep buying tickets.
Because you punks keep going to these things.
You guys really like Iowa State basketball.
Yeah. Quit supporting the program.
Which is really lucrative for our jobs until it makes us have to work on New Year's Eve. Yeah, life's tough, man, when you got to work on New Year's Eve.
Oh, I know.
These jobs are so difficult.
Well, I think Matt Schultz, our buddy Matt Schultz up there at the Sports Information, I think he just get a keg in the media room that night.
I don't know what's stopping him.
It'll be after the game. We will not indulge beforehand.
Chris does not have his fingers crossed right now. Yeah. I promise you guys.
Yeah. So Matt, you may or may not be listening. You probably are.
I don't know why he wouldn't
do us a solid, buddy. All right, Travis. Thanks, man. Hope you enjoyed your first lick at the Cyclone Fanatic podcast.
Absolutely. Let's do it again.
Enjoy Humboldt.
I will.
Tonight.
How could I not?
You got a game on Monday night too?
I assume
so. Are you just on the Gilbert beat from here on out?
Nah, we move it around depending on who wins and who loses. I don't know who's favored in the Ames-Urbandale game. That'll be
a good game, I think.
I think so, too. Ames is better this year than I thought they'd be, considering they lost basically everybody off a great team last year.
What was the reaction to the whole East High thing like at the Ames Tribune office?
You know what? I was lucky enough to be at my 8th wedding of the year. So I got to skip out on a lot of that, but everything I heard in you know, the next week was that it was not an enjoyable experience for everybody involved.
Anthony did a nice job covering that story.
Yeah, it was an interesting deal because, like, if you read what Ames said versus you read what the Des Moines school district said, two opposite things.
I mean,
that was just a mess. You know, I wish they could have figured out a way to play that game one way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I felt bad for the East kids because the ones who, you know, were playing on that, they didn't have anything to do with that. And senior night, man, like, that's what it's all about when you're in high school.
Yeah, I mean, my point would be that it really sucks for them and a reputation that East High has that, you know, probably isn't fully deserved at this point in time, you know, that is unfair. But if you're Ames and there, or if you're any school administrator, East or Ames, and there's even the remotest whiff of gun violence.
Oh, I know.
And you decide to play the game and a tragic occurrence happens, you're in a lot of trouble, you know, beyond the fact that, you know, if people get hurt or anything like that, just from a professional standpoint.
Yeah, in 2014.
You're getting strung up. So, I mean, no matter what happened, as soon as those rumors came out, it was going to be a lose-lose for everybody, in my opinion.
That's what it turned out to be.
Yeah.
All right, man. Enjoy Humboldt.
Will do.
We'll be looking for the updates tonight on Twitter, all right?
Yeah, you got it.
All right. He's Travis Hines, Ames Tribune, stopping by for a little college basketball preview podcast. We'll hear more from Travis here in the coming weeks and months. Thanks to Mr. B Clothing, 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. Stop on down. Tell Tim Sitzman hello. Get yourself one of those wool blazers. Tis the season. You're going to need it. It's going to get cold out. It already is. Thanks for listening. Podcast coming up. You'll have the Cyclone Fanatic radio show from Thursday night. Bloom and I from Benchwarmers in Ankeny will be there on Beggar's Night. If you want to come by in a Halloween costume, I'll buy you a beer. And then on on Friday, we're going to have our the second installment of the new Friday After Work or slash class, whatever you do. We're going to have that podcast. It's going to be heavily based on gambling because Mark Charter from Mark Charter Real Estate, he loves point spreads and whatnot. So we're gonna talk a lot about that the Big 12 football weekend. Thanks for listening, everybody. So long.